Charity Marsh, Holsey Kennedy Research Chair, an interactive meeting in Florence, the Faculty of Fine Arts at the University of Regina. Her research program is focused on interactive media and performance and how cultures and practices associated with this broad category contribute to dialogues concerning regionalism, cultural identity, and community, specifically within Western and Northern Canada, and more generally on a global scale. The title of Charity's paper today is
Changed.
There it is.
Beautiful. Is it Kenny Starr declares sovereignty?
Yes.
Intersections of an Indigenous feminist activist and hip hop politics. Dr. Charity Marsh.
Great. Okay. I'm just going to start with this quote by Kinney herself, who's in the studio there. Putting out this new record and launching a crowdfunding campaign to get it to people is unnerving but interesting. My ego is on the line, as well as my product, and because the record was made for my nieces, I'm heavily invested. So Kinney Starr's 2013 album, Kiss It, and the surrounding discourse offers us significant insight into the multiple ways that her Indigenous, feminist, activist, queer, and hip-hop politics intersect. In today's presentation, I offer one interpretation of how, with Kiss It, Kinney Starr confronts ongoing systemic barriers in the still male-dominated music industry, and in particular in the genre of hip-hop, through her conceptualization of sovereignty. I will also discuss how she challenges conventional industry models for producing and releasing an album through the use of the crowdfunding campaign, however, maybe not as successfully as she had hoped. And I will begin to examine the ways in which Kinney addresses the pervasiveness of pornography and what she feels this has done to the relationship that women and young girls have to their sexuality in the title track of the album, Kiss It. I want to suggest that Kinney's public and productive strategies for working through some of the most prevalent contradictions faced by women musicians today is an element that sets her apart from her peers. It is one of the very things that draws me back to her work over and over again. To begin, I will address how Kinney Starr draws on the concept of sovereignty, moving in then into a discussion of the crowdfunding campaign, the Indiegogo campaign that she did, followed by a brief analysis of the lyrics to the title track, Kiss It. And I'll conclude with a brief exploration of the cover art for the album that I received the day before the conference. So. Just a note that Kiss It has not been released yet. It has been released to some of the people who participated in the crowdfunding campaign, so those who made donations. But it's coming, but it's not yet out. So sovereignty. I'm not comfortable being a flag. I can hold up the flag, but I don't want to be a flag. So another quote from Kinney. Whether rapping about conflict resolution, sexuality and desire, the water crisis, land ownership, and the recent Idle No More movement, or coming to terms with shifting histories and the discomforts and pleasures of living in one's own skin, Kinney Starr's music provides a provocative and compelling commentary on contemporary culture. So I'm just going to play you
some, a little bit of my sarcastic response to the way of the amount of over-sexualization and the abundance of negative language in hip-hop and rock music and pop music, and which isn't to say that I don't like those forms, because I do, and it is my form. Like, hip-hop is the genre that I work in. I'm a producer, I write my own beats, I make my own product. But I wanted to make something that kind of dispelled at least some of the mythology around women just being, like, you know, sluts and bitches.
Okay. So this is one of the first videos I'll talk about them that she put out as a commentary for the crowdfunding campaign, but I'll come back to it. I just really wanted you also to hear herself, situate herself. Hip-hop is her genre, whether or not she's the music industry or others. They keep trying to place her in other categories. So I think it's really important that we understand that she recognizes that and states it very clearly. So when discussing her new album, Kinney declares, "It's definitely the most hip-hop record I've made in a while. On this record, my concept was to use as little instrumentation, as little money, as few preamps, as little gear as possible. I programmed and did everything. That's not really bragging, it's a concept. I'm proud of myself for it. I programmed all the beats, played all the instruments, sang everything, wrote everything, because I am interested in the idea of sovereignty. I was really adamant about wanting to do it myself. So there are two things that I want to discuss here just from this quote. The first, it could be interpreted from these comments that this is the first time she has done everything. In fact, Kinney has most often written her songs, created her own beats, played multiple instruments in the recording, and is herself a producer. I think it's important to take into account how women represent their work and the agency they have with the creation and production of their artwork. And here I've written on this, talking about Bjork in particular and Madonna and how people map gendered ideas onto women about their participation in the creation and production of the work, whether it's through the gendering of genres, technologies, production work, etc. And here, of course, I'm heavily indebted to the work that Tara Rogers did on Pink Noises and thinking about the inclusion of women in these kinds of histories and places. Bev Diamond's work on Indigenous women in the recording studio is also very important and relevant here. Second, it is critical to understand that Kinney's definition of sovereignty is a political idea, capturing the concept that all people, including Indigenous peoples, have the right to self-determination. And what I think is more important is that Kinney here also expresses the significance of sovereignty as a category of intellectual, political, and cultural work. For Kinney, doing everything on the album herself is one facet of how she declares and practices sovereignty. It is a strategy for mixing worlds and transcending borders. It is a strategy for working against conventional gendered norms of hip-hop, and of course for problematizing concepts like identity and nationalism. So she states in an interview, "I have trouble with nationalism in general. This extends to being particular to any boundary inside a community, a fashion, a race. Conceptually, I have issues with boundaries and borders. I've been writing about this, but there's something inside me that I felt since I was very, very little. I can't speak for other Native people or white people. Integration is lacking in many facets, in the queer community, in the Native community, in the hip-hop community. People don't really listen to each other if they have an agenda based on borders between each other." So, end quote. So sovereignty for Kinney is a political concept which enables her to problematize and challenge the many borders and boundaries she encounters as a hip-hop artist, as an Indigenous or self-declared half-breed woman, as a bisexual woman, as an activist. So through this lens, I argue that Kinney's politics have evolved and shifted to a place where she can now express, theorize, and work through the complexities and many contradictions that she faces in her life. It's good that we ended with a discussion on contradictions before. So this quote here, I think this really speaks to, I'll talk about what I think it speaks to. I'll read it to you first. "I want to be on stage and express the voice that comes from my ancestors, but I wish it could happen in the dark, where only sound guides the moment rather than image. I want to feel free and unencumbered like I used to before the internet, before cameras and YouTube and popularity hits on websites were part of everyday life, and I was a nudist, a graffiti artist, an introvert, invisible." So there's so much to unpack in this quotation, and I'll just take a couple of little pieces. What is captured here is a very real anxiety. One that Kinney deals with every time she is about to go on stage, every time she's about to post something online, every time she makes a public appearance, physically, virtually, etc. These statements also express a nostalgia, a problematic nostalgia, but a nostalgia for a different kind of mediated artistic experience, one that isn't tied to this sort of quick, ongoing social media pace, I suppose we could say. Thus, you can imagine her uneasiness and her discomfort with doing a crowdfunding campaign. In late fall 2012, Kinney launched an online Indiegogo campaign to raise funds to support the manufacturing, marketing, and release of the new record Kiss It. So, as discussed in Sarah Bannerman's article, Crowdfunding Culture, and this is one of the articles that came out of the conference from Montreal that's in the journal, take a look. She states, although it's not a new phenomenon, quote, the ease, availability, and reach of online platforms for crowdfunding is changing how some cultural practices are funded, and thus crowdfunding can and does alter the existing conditions for cultural production, end quote. For Kinney, this was a very big jump ideologically from previous models, the models used by many Canadian artists, right, via artist grants, factor grants, signing with a label, etc., to fund her album. She explains, quote, I entered the music business when there was real money changing hands. There's still real money changing hands, but it's pretty much at the top tiers now because there's so little money changing hands in the music business. As artists, we need to be very innovative and think outside the box, end quote. Indeed, for Kinney and her manager, Christian Hurst, the main motivation behind the campaign was attempting to raise the final dollars, approximately $25,000, needed to release the record. And the album had been done for about a year and had been sitting because of a couple of things that had fallen through. So turning to the reward-based model, and Sarah talks about the four different models of crowdfunding, but turning to the reward-based model, Kinney offered numerous perks in return for monetary support. Everything from digital downloads, vinyl, her book, How I Learned to Run, to personal yoga instruction, joint songwriting ventures, recording sessions, and private shows. She presented a meaningful return for one's investment in and support of her artwork, challenging her fans and herself to think differently about the process of producing and releasing an album. Throughout the campaign, Kinney released a sneak preview of four tracks and the music video for Home is Everywhere. That's the first track on the album. She also aired three video commentaries discussing aspects of the album, her politics, and the rationale for the campaign.
My name is Kinney Starr. We're 4 days away from the end of my crowdfunding campaign. It's December 26th. I would like to start off by saying thank you very much to everybody who has contributed. The process of making this crowdfunding campaign has been incredibly humbling, very, very, very devastating to my self-esteem. I'm so grateful for everybody who has contributed and to everybody who's been sharing the link and helping out. It means so much. More importantly than my crowdfunding campaign has been the emergence of this Idle No More movement in solidarity with Mohawk Chief Teresa Spence up in Attawapiskat. It's been pretty amazing to see people congregating in a peaceful way. So I'm just going to say goodbye to you now, and once again, thank you to everybody who has contributed to my crowdfunding campaign. My record will be out real soon. Thank you to all the activists that are putting their life and energy and love into the Idle No More movement. Let's make 2013 and onwards better for everybody.
Okay. So, again, there's so much to unpack, but as is quite common with the majority of these kinds of campaigns, the campaign ended without meeting its goal. It raised just over $7,000, so $7,200. When discussing the outcome of the campaign with Kinney's manager, he raised a number of contributing factors. He talked about things like timing. It ended just after Christmas. It was over that kind of Christmas period. The need for a full-time staff person to work and be a driving force behind the campaign, which they did not have, as well as the need for the artist to be committed to and believe in the campaign. And you can tell maybe from Kinney that there was some reservations going on here. She even talks about the beating sort of her self-esteem. And in Sarah's article, she talks about the popularity, what happens around crowdfunding and issues of popularity, etc. So Kinney, as I said, had reservations. But rather than embodying the campaign as her fans investing in and getting a major return for supporting the album, she was quite concerned about how it would appear to be asking her peeps, her fans, her networks for handouts and appearing needy. She felt a responsibility to her fans and to herself to not ask for money in this kind of way. So after watching the video commentaries and reading some of her comments about the campaign and talking to her manager, to me, the anxieties in her response are burdened by hegemonic norms associated with gender and race. And this becomes even more problematic as she explicitly attempts to challenge these kinds of norms in her music and performance. Another factor I want to highlight here is that I believe artists who are really hands-on and social media savvy, they do much better at these kinds of campaigns. They're connected on these digital platforms in very different ways. And I would say for Kinney, her strengths are very much more about, they're more in her performance and her onstage presence, which we can see in a clip from a 2010 Calgary performance where she introduces the song Kiss It that I'm going to talk about to an audience for one of the first times.
So I'm working on a side project called Roller Derby. And Roller Derby is sex from a woman's perspective. The record that I have available here is all guitar songs, and then I'm working on a side project. It's a hip-hop project, and it's all sex from a woman's perspective in response to the massive amounts of pornography that we are all exposed to now. That's all just bam, 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 and the girls, oh, watching it, I'm just like... And I was talking about the availability of pornography online to everybody with a friend of mine who writes amazing beats, this producer Mills, out of Hobie. He was like, yeah, remember 70s and 80s porn? It was like, you know, like, people were actually having romance, and they were, like, kissing, there was, like, stories, people had personality, there was, like, women were receiving head just as much as guys were. It was, like, romance and pretty and everything. I'm like, yeah, I remember that, because I remember magazines and stuff as a kid, and me and my brothers were like, whoa, what's that? And we actually used to find porn in the back of the church. The back of the church where we lived, we used to go up the block, and there was Archie comics and porn and newspapers, so that's where we found our stuff. Anyway, I divert a little bit from my point. My point is that I'm interested in what the world would be like if the sex that we were exposed to en masse were not commodified. What it would be like if it was more romance and slower and more beautiful, and also women were having real orgasms rather than faking it. I'm like, no, those are actresses. Remember, you know, it's TV, right? So this is called Kiss It, and it's from that body of work that's coming. Get it? Coming? So you guys gotta kick it. This is your kit, snare, kit. That means you guys participate. Yeah. So yeah. And you can sing on the chorus if you want, especially if there's anybody who like loves to get hurt. Touch the back of my legs, baby, just like an unknown secret from forgotten centuries, and flip me over, kiss my ankles, wrap your hands around them, tiny and fragile. This is where the ground pushes up into me, and if you start there, you unlock creep beds and history. Now use your mouth, use curious hands, that cruising on slow, that's the master plan. Kiss it. Kiss it all around, kiss it all around, before you go downtown, kiss it. Kiss it all around, kiss it all around, before you go downtown.
Okay, so I wanted to play that lengthy bit, one, to show you her presence and her engagement with the audience and how she feels, obviously, although she's very nervous to get on stage, once she gets on stage, she feels quite comfortable to articulate her politics, her ideas, etc. So, in the title track, Kiss It, Kinney calls into question how women and women's sexualities continue to perpetuate, or how they're represented, they continue to perpetuate the degradation of and symbolic violence against women as an accepted norm, while simultaneously critiquing the narrowly defined and highly problematic prescribed masculine or male roles offered up in public discourse, especially in hip-hop and rock music. So the song and most of the album are a throwback to old school early 90s hip hop and electronic. I can really hear, initially I started listening to some of these tracks and I'm just like, oh my goodness, this is Peaches. Oh my goodness, this is, you know, so there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on there, and she's certainly drawing on a lot of people who she's found as big influences. it's a pretty stripped down kind of aesthetic. It's pretty nice. The lyrics, they ask the listener, particularly the male listener, to kiss it all around before going downtown. And so here, I'll just play you so you can hear a little bit more.
Touch the back of my legs, baby. That's like an unknown secret from forgotten centuries. Yeah, flip me over. Kiss my ankles, wrap your hands around them. Tiny and fragile. This is where the ground pushes up into me. And if you start there, you unlock creek beds and history. Now use your mouth, use curious hands. Cruise on slow, that's a master plan. Kiss it, kissing all around. Kiss it all around before you go downtown. Kiss it, kissing all around. Kissing all around before you go downtown. Kiss it. Kiss it all around before you go downtown. Kiss it, kiss it all around and around and around and around. And put your hands all up.
Okay, so actually I'll just get you to, yeah, thank you, Fade. Nice. You can see from the lyrics, it goes on. She basically offers a literal map or route to get downtown. And Kinney challenges everyone, not just her male listeners, but certainly her the young women in her crowd, to consider more seriously how to sex, how to pleasure, how to please a woman, and bring her to climax. This is something that she hears continually, that of course, how it's presented and represented is just so problematic today. So she goes on to say, and this is a little bit later in the track, the lyrics, so now that you took your time like a philosopher, I'm out of my mind and you read me like a river. You flow strong, you feel decades long, and my crit is so tight, I'm like a Tupac song. And then we rise like a landslide, roots collide. So the ultimate goal here in this track for her is her orgasm, her pleasure. This contradicts the perpetual representation of women achieving fake climaxes depicted over and over again in popular culture. She asks her audience to read women's pleasure as a priority and as much more than what is offered in problematic and often false representations of women's pleasure. So she's not denouncing pornography, and I think that's really important to say. She participates, etc., but she is challenging what have become common and normative notions of women's pleasure and how this pleasure could or should be achieved instead. So she's problematizing something without condemning everything. To think about this work, I received this the album artwork just, as I said, the day before. And so it really impacted what I was thinking about, and certainly what I was thinking about around sovereignty and sexuality and all these kinds of things. So in the work that I've published on Björk, I've theorized around the significance and meaningfulness of album art, more specifically articulating that album art as a meaningful discourse when attempting to read or interpret the music that's on the album. So just prior, as I said, I just received the draft, and of course I asked if I could show it, because this isn't the final draft, so just to say, but I was given permission to do so, and it was like, well, we really want to hear your feedback, and I was like, okay, so feedback. The artwork, a photo organized spontaneously by Kinney herself, actually, on a whim, she was there, it came together. She conjures up a frustrating contradiction within which women artists who critique highly sexualized representations of girls and women, and yet want to embody beauty and sexuality on their own terms, find themselves. So in a blog post titled, Can I Flaunt My Body and Be a Feminist?, written by Kinney in December, she writes, quote, the new album talks about female sexuality, among other things, and writing an album or blogging about this topic is as complex as the very subject itself. Female sexuality is diverse, ever-changing, and full of contradictions. What is cool for one woman is appalling to another. The topic infuriates, engages, and perplexes most people, including myself, end quote. So Kinney is caught in an ongoing controversial debate in feminism in particular, one which started many years ago and continues today. This debate at times can cause paralysis as one attempts to negotiate the tensions of ongoing dichotomies of the virgin whore. Binaries that seem old and passé and yet are as pervasive, and they continue to have a devastating impact on the actions of women artists, their fans, and the industry. Thus, when Kinney blogs the following, there's a couple things. One, she talks about that there are previous photos of her up that she knows about, and she says, having hot photos in my Kinney Star brand discredits my efforts to deconstruct the broader conversation around sexuality, and that dichotomy is the core of this conversation. It is where the question begins, not ends. And then she also says, I know that by taking a step towards self-love and revealing my body at times, I become a bad feminist in some people's eyes, or a hypocrite. She said, I'll take the bullets for this conversation because I think we are all equally confused as to how to be a great woman in a time where everything goes. I don't have any of this figured out, and I'm just like you. I like to look my best some days. I want things to be good for us all, and I'm seeking comfort in my own skin in this world as a sexual, intelligent, curious human, end quote. So she is working through an intensely frustrating and anxiety-filled set of parameters that artists must work within and against. So the album cover, to conclude, depicts Kinney lying on a couch with her back to us. She is naked and peering over her shoulder. Her hand reaches out for her grandfather's rifle, which people wouldn't know unless they talked. And this rifle lays next to her and is actually almost the length of her entire body. So there's lots there. The house has been in her family for generations and offers a particular kind of history, a historical aesthetic. The image presents Kinney as open and yet cautious, vulnerable and yet strong. She is willing to show the audience many layers of who she is, whether they are aware of her histories and the stories that make up the meaning of this photo, all of the stories that are part of this, or not. She plays with contradiction. She presents herself on her own terms as a way to unravel preconceived ideas. She transforms conventional models to her own use in order to meet her own cultural and political needs. And in so doing, she declares sovereignty.
You want me to
get on the album photo? I'm not sure I understood. That might be a contradiction, but I'm not sure I understood the sovereignty versus, like, she hates boundaries.
I think for her, the contradictions around this, the sovereignty around the boundaries that are colonized boundaries, the way that she's talking about them, right? The way she thinks about that sort of normative, conventional ideas of how borders should be created, how national identities are embraced or challenged or put forward. But also as someone of borders, you know, basically, even I think within her own experience of being someone who is mixed blood, who has who talks freely about at times passing in her life as white, but then coming out as an Indigenous artist. All of the kind of contradictions and boundaries that are there. But of course, she's very much an activist around land claims, around environment, around water, around issues that now the Out on the Border, they're calling it the Sovereignty Summer, right? Like this new push.
Then you are.
Okay, I want to go back to this.
I know.
Could you talk more about that? Because there's something that annoys me, and I'm wondering if I'm the only one who's annoyed by it.
Well, there's lots of things to talk about, I think, with it. And as I said, because I just got it, I didn't do a full analysis. I think one could take this image and basically write an entire chapter about this image for a variety of different reasons, coming out of a number of disciplinary perspectives as well. Maybe you tell me what you were annoyed by, and then I'll respond to that.
There's two things that annoy me.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, the first one is the little birdies.
Yeah, that is,
it's something I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's going to stay.
I think that might be one of them.
The birdies I really don't get. For me, that's so stereotypical in terms of all sorts of things. And
yeah.
But maybe that's the point. Maybe the contrast between something that is not stereotypical in many different ways and then that. So maybe, but for me, that's already the kind of food. The second one is the gun. I'm uncomfortable with the gun, but that's me. And the way you describe it, it's a long, very long, big thing. We don't know it's the grandfather's.
No,
right?
We don't.
So we don't know the connection. So for me, there's something.
One, I don't know how much she's going to share on the actual, about the album cover. Okay, so that's one thing. So she may actually articulate some of the story. I think one of the things that I see her doing here is really challenging. She knows that that's going to provoke a very particular kind of response. I think from a variety of different perspectives, especially the politics of today, the gun culture, etc., writing those kinds of things. But yet at the same time, it's a way for her, it's also about her talking about colonialism, right? And sort of the violence of colonialism and how that's still very much embedded in part of her life and something that she has to deal with and engage with on a daily basis as someone who can pass and be both privileged and certainly not privileged. And even just the backstory of her family and the crisis in there. I mean, she also has a cousin who's a very prominent musician who never talks about her ancestry. And there's lots of things that I think here. And I do believe that the gun is just about provoking a particular certain responses, and whether that, you know, I think it's going to depend on what she does with that color, the birds. I don't know why she's chosen to do that. I don't know if it's to soften something, if it's to
take your eyes away from something else.
Yeah, like I don't know. So I'm hoping that when I talk with Christian and go back, her manager, that I'm gonna be like, so what's that about? What are you doing? So yeah, thank you.
Okay, and since this is the last paper, we'll just take another.
Okay. Well, also just to comment on the album cover itself, we look at the typeface of Kiss It. It kind of reminds me a bit of like Western movies,
yeah,
like cowboy and Indian sort of style. And so like, it could be like an ironic sort of.
Yeah, I think the irony is there, definitely.
Thing, so.
And it's very distinct here. This is very distinct from this text.
Yeah.
And how it's,
Well, I'm happy to let
you go. No,
okay. Well, okay, maybe it could be brief. I mean, about the crowdfunding thing, like I had this moment in your presentation where I thought about the whole Rock Forward scenario and how in like a week, you know, $150,000 was made. It just made me feel so sick.
Mm-hmm.
Like she went through this experience.
Yeah.
So is that, I mean, is her experience, in your opinion, a statement that crowdfunding is just like an empty kind of vehicle for realization of this type of mission? And I wonder what the $25,000 was necessary for. Was it to press and release albums?
Marketing release,
right.
Specifically.
Right.
She put that right there. So everything had been already recorded, done. You know, a label deal, something had fallen through. If they'd been sitting on this for a year, they wanted to get it. I mean, she already has two other albums already done at this point. So, I think crowdfunding, I think there are, because a lot of people talk about, what's her name, that just had like huge success.
Amanda Palmer.
Yes, Amanda Palmer, right? But Amanda Palmer is tied into her fan base in a social media kind of way that Kinney is not.
Mm-hmm.
Like her strengths come in her performance, in her onstage delivery, and that kind of liveness, which is a little bit different. I asked, you know, about this, like, would they do it again? And Christian said, you know, basically you need one person running that campaign and putting it out in a very particular kind of way, and you need it to be so tight, and you need the artist to be so committed to it and understanding it is, of course you would give money to support this product that you're going to buy anyway, and look at, I'm offering you all of these other things. So it's kind of like an ego thing, which, you know, they really worked through that, like together. It was a struggle, I think, between Kinney and her manager around this, but she was not comfortable with it. And I, as I said, I think that's tied, like here is an Indigenous queer hip hop woman, which, and you can think about how all of that unpacks and unravels, asking her fans or putting it out there that she needs this kind of help when she's always really talked about being an independent artist, being autonomous, you know, doing things on her own. So I think there's lots of tensions there. And I don't see it as a great platform. Like, I think the percentage of successful crowdfunding platforms is actually very, very low. It's under 5%.
Yeah.
So.
Susan, last question.
I'm sorry I came in at the
it's
timing
okay.
For other panels now got thrown off because of the aging. I'm just thinking about this image, and yes, there's a gun there, but is she looking back at that gun with some trepidation? It's like, I think, taking into account that she's, it looks to me like she's naked and she's really kind of, there's a kind of vulnerability about the look that she's giving towards the guy. I think it's, there's a commentary going on with that gun. It's not just that there's a gun there, right?
I think definitely, and also the way the gun is positioned. So it's not just the length of her body, but it's positioned in a way, even if she reaches back and get it, it's not turned the other way where she could put her hand on the trigger.
Yeah.
Right? So it's the relationship to that very symbolic, symbol. Well, it's just such a huge symbol. And also the fact that this entire album is really about rethinking how young women and women are thinking about sexuality or being how that's being mediated, how women's and girls' sexuality is being mediated now, right? And the way that she wants people to start to rethink that. So, I mean, you could talk about the phallus, we could talk about violence, symbolic violence that she's certainly trying to address, you know. And there's much more to it. I mean, I haven't even talked about what's out the window. I haven't talked about the binoculars down the side. You know, that this, in fact, is not a couch. It's a love seat. And what does, there's so many other elements there that need to be unpacked. Lynn,
just a quick about the crowdfunding. Maybe you guys have heard, but there's a group in Quebec called Mr. Baer. And they're going to start a quite different way of planning. They're sort of business, whatever you call it, business plan. And basically, they're going to ask people to give to Mr. Valère money per month, sort of like a
monthly
payment. yeah, exactly. In support of the artistic project of the group, rather than, and one of the ways that it has been presented, which I thought was quite interesting, is at a distance from the artists.
Mm-hmm.
It's the manager who's been presenting that. He was in the media all week, really pushing it forth, saying this is like, we've reached the limits of crowdfunding, and this is about giving the artists as much liberty as possible, as much so the commitment is not so much to one specific project or to you having access to their individual lives, it's like supporting their creativity in all various facets. Mm-hmm. You'll get your money's worth, of course.
Yes.
But so I was thinking, in light of that, or sort of uncomfortable way of dealing, she's put herself forth. I mean, she's the one doing the stuff. What about her manager? How did she?
She's really bad at having a manager, I think, so far, because it's a fairly new thing for her. And so he would go on Facebook and post as her, and then she would come on and go, thanks to my manager for posting this comment, because she wasn't there. And he's just like, would you just stop doing that? We just talked about this. Like, so I think, you know, she's also struggling with that. And he's, he's a really interesting, it happens that I went to grade school and high school with him, and he's a really interesting, awesome dude. And just can't say enough about how important her work is for a variety of different reasons. And so I think their relationship is interesting, and I'll get to know more about that when I talk with Kinney in June. But the crowdfunding thing, to me, it was obviously something very much, even what she offered, I mean, for her to write a song with you, you know, those are pretty personal kinds of things, or to and she gets on one of the commentaries, she says, you know, so have buy a concert in your house. Like, I tell you, it'll be a much more intimate kind of setting. You'll get more out of it. And she's presenting it, but it's in this way where you're like, oh, I feel like, you know, that we're taking advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it was $5,000, but there's something, and that included the flight and everything. So it was actually not a lot of cost if you didn't live in the same city as her. But just interesting, really personal kinds of things. Come, I'll do a yoga, I'll be your yoga instructor, you know, like, wow. I don't know. So anyway, yeah, I think doing it, I think there are other kinds of ways that it's done, or that it's potential, the potential of it is really interesting, but, you know, it does fall into these kind of slippery categories of perpetuating other kinds of power relations and norms. So, thanks very much.